Locked On NBA. The biggest stories, the local experts. Every Monday we speak to the Locked On Podcast Network host about the biggest news across the NBA. Today, we go to speak with the host of the Locked On Celtics podcast, John Corrales, about the Basketball Hall of Fame enshrinements of Paul Pierce, Chris Bosh, Tony Kukoc, and more. And then we go to Sean Coleman of Locked On Grizzlies about the Mark Gasol deal. Mark is back in Memphis temporarily. We talk about Gasol's impact in the NBA and what he means to the Memphis team, franchise, and fan base. It's all coming up. The biggest stories, the local experts on Locked On NBA.
You are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Locked On NBA. I am your Monday host, Josh Lloyd. I'm also the host of the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast, and I'm the lead analyst at BasketballMonster.com and at Yahoo Sports Australia. We're a few weeks away from NBA training camp starting off. We had the Basketball Hall of Fame, which we're going to talk about, and then just some legacies of guys like Marc Gasol across the NBA. So let's get to it. So we'll bring him in now. The host of the Locked On Celtics podcast, John Corrales, is here with me. John, the Basketball Hall of Fame over the weekend. A couple of Celtics were involved in that process. Interestingly, Bill Russell was inducted again for a second time, this time as a coach. A little bit weird that they do it separately there. I just thought he's in. But he's in a second time as a coach. And then, of course, Paul Pierce, Celtics legend, has been inducted into the Hall of Fame. I guess a little bit of positive press for Paul Pierce after some of his other social faux pas over the past, I don't even know how long. It's been a wild time. But for Celtics fans in general, how do they hold Pierce? What sort of regard are they holding Paul Pierce in? Because I think he gets a little bit overlooked in areas of basketball fandom that aren't Boston-centric. How does Boston view Paul Pierce?
I mean, Pierce is held in a very high regard right now, especially now. I think the beauty of Paul Pierce is kind of how human his story is. Why Boston loves Paul Pierce is he has a bit of a story of redemption. And you know, the first few years of his career, he was this brash, cocky kid who, you know, couldn't quite handle things the way he probably should have without that, you know, professionalism. He was part of one of the worst Team USA performances that we've seen, and things were going pretty poorly for him in Boston. And there was a point there where he thought he was going to get traded. He was almost moved to Portland. Danny Ainge was really shopping him hard to try to trade him on draft night to get Chris Paul. And none of that materialized, and what Pierce did was he kind of made amends with Doc Rivers. They butted heads pretty hard. And that moment of making amends with Doc Rivers really helped turn things around, because then they turned around and got Kevin Garnett and Ray Allen, and to have Pierce up there holding that Finals MVP trophy, it was a good full circle for him, and kind of he went from a guy that a lot of Boston wanted traded to kind of a lovable Boston hero. So his journey is part of what makes him so special.
Is there any, animosity is the wrong word, but your thoughts on the way that, I guess, his career ended, you know, going to Brooklyn, Washington, the Clippers there at the end, or is that just sort of disregarded now that we're a few years removed from it?
Yeah, I think the further we get away from it, the more we forget. I think when you saw him come back to Boston as a Clipper and hit that last three-pointer, that, you know, as he walked off the Garden floor for the last time, that reaction said everything as an answer to this. They, Boston fans kind of don't care. They understood what the business was. And while I think Boston would have loved to have had him here for his entire career, the flip side is he was part of a trade to Brooklyn that turned around and gave the Celtics Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and this current iteration of the Celtics, very heavily connected to Paul Pierce. So that lineage continues on. That Paul Pierce effect is still here, in the fact that Tatum and Brown are part of the team as a result of that trade.
Yeah, I'd never really thought about it that way, that he was a part of that deal that did net those picks from Brooklyn to get Jaylen and Jason onto the team. Now, we've talked about Bill Russell as a part of that, but again, he's been in the Hall of Fame for ages, and now he is in there as a coach. But there are other players in this Hall of Fame class, and I think one of the most interesting ones, and one of the guys who gave the best speech there at the Hall of Fame, was probably Chris Bosh, a guy that was a contemporary of Paul Pierce throughout their careers. Now, you're not on your Locked On Celtics podcast here, John, so you can give an honest answer without having Celtics fans completely destroy you. Who do you think was a better player, Chris Bosh or Paul Pierce?
Oh, man. That's tough. That's tough. I kind of put them at an equal level. I think Bosh was different, and I don't think Bosh was ever fully realized. I think he always had to adjust his game, especially in the Miami days. It was always obviously LeBron, and obviously it's Dwayne Wade, and he had to adjust the most, kind of like what Ray Allen did in Boston. So I can't pick one over the other. I'm not going to sit there and say Pierce was definitively better than Bosh. Bosh was, I mean, he's a Hall of Famer, obviously, for obvious reasons. So I can't say one was better than the other. I'll take the cop out answer and say they were both about the same level. Bosh was great, but I think Pierce and Bosh belong in that just kind of tier below. Like, we know that they're not LeBron. We know that they're not Michael Jordan. But you can still be that tier below and be one of the all-time greats, and I think that's where they belong.
I'm not sure if Paul Pierce knows that he isn't LeBron, but that's another discussion for.
That's what makes him. Paul Pierce does not like LeBron James.
No, he doesn't.
So it's one of my favorite like little running subplots.
Yeah, he's not afraid to say some things about LeBron. But in terms of Bosh. Yeah, that Ray Allen comparison is really good because obviously Allen was putting up huge numbers in Milwaukee and Seattle before he came across to Boston and had to take that step back. And much like Bosh was doing in Toronto with those big numbers. And I think if we saw the player that Chris Bosh was in Miami, where he stepped up his defense and he became a three-point shooting threat, but put him back into the role that he had in Toronto, people would view his career a little bit differently. They'd have him, because people go, oh, Chris Bosh, like, was he actually that good? And people make comparisons of players now and they go, oh, maybe he becomes Chris Bosh. Like, do you realize, understand how good Chris Bosh actually was? But if we saw the way he evolved in Miami and put him back into a number one role while having those skills, I think people would have viewed him quite differently there because he took his game in his prime to this next level, but it was so muted behind those other guys.
It was, first of all, he started out in Toronto, right? And the NBA is not going to put Toronto on national TV. Their TV ratings don't count, so they get minimized. So you have that. Toronto took a long time for Toronto to even be a major force, right? Even when they were good, they're not seen as good as they really were. And then Bosh, when he gets into the national spotlight and everybody gets a chance to see him, he's your third option, and he never really got a chance to see. I think the blood clotting issues, the issues that forced his medical retirement, really hurt his chances to kind of break out of shadows. We never really got to see the full Chris Bosh impact and what he could have been, because I think Bosh with a higher usage rate certainly could have been a little bit more dynamic. And yeah, you heard him talking about the first time he shot five threes, he was like, oh, this is kind of nice. And people want to say that Bosh was one of the forefathers of the big men who shoot. I think it goes a little further back. It actually goes back to Kevin Garnett. But he's in that lineage. And I think if we got to see that full impact, the full Chris Bosh experience, because stretch fives and stretch fours are so important nowadays – We would have had a lot more comparisons to like, yep, there's another Chris Bosh out there. His name, the comparison certainly would have been a lot greater.
Other guys that were enshrined, I don't want to give everyone a short shrift as we're talking about Paul and Paul Pierce and Chris Bosh here. Chris Webber, probably the next biggest name there. It seemed weird that he hadn't been in the Hall of Fame already, but he was a dominant powerhouse back in his day after being that number one overall pick back in the mid-90s. He finally gets in there. Ben Wallace is there. Rick Adelman, Jay Wright, Australia's greatest basketballer, Lauren Jackson, is in there as well. Yolanda Griffith, Val Ackerman, Cotton Fitzsimmons, Howard Garfinkel, Fats Jenkins, Bob Dandridge, Pearl Moore, and Tony Kukoc is in there. Now, Tony Kukoc, another one of those guys that I think part of the major reason he's in there, John, is international play. But he was unbelievable in the NBA. And much like Chris Bosh, you talk about shooting big men and shooting fours. That's exactly what he did when he came across to the Bulls. His role was so marginalized playing next to Scottie and Michael. But he was really, really good. And he fit that role and he was a key part in those championships.
Yeah, you heard, was it Sam Smith, the Bulls? Yeah. the Bulls guy who maybe took it a bit too far and said that Kukoc would have been Luka if he didn't have to play behind Michael and Scotty. Maybe a bit too far. But I get what he was trying to say in that I think, especially back then, he was the first kind of or in that first wave of like the big international deals, you know, the Drazen Petrovic, the Arvydas Sabonis. He was in that first kind of real big wave. So I think he was kind of one of those stereotype breakers that probably I wish could have gotten a little bit more shine to show that Euros weren't soft and weren't whatever all those stereotypes that they tried to impart on those guys back then. Yeah, he could have been a lot more on his own, just like a lot of these guys. But I think his legacy is I don't want to say tainted, but it's clouded by the whole connection to Michael and Scotty. First of all, when the Dream Team made it a point to shut him down at every turn, and then his time in Chicago, and then even the Scottie Pippen kind of storming off, refusing to get off the bench because Phil Jackson called a final play for Kukoc instead of Scotty, and that whole thing. So it's a little unfair, and I think that colors a lot of what people's opinions are going to be of Kukoc, especially, you know, in America, where a lot of people forget that it's the Basketball Hall of Fame. They just think of it as the NBA Hall of Fame. And you get a little bit of like, oh, really, him? He was a tremendous player. And there's a reason why he was in that first wave of Europeans to come on over and have a major impact.
Well, John, thanks for coming on and chatting about the Basketball Hall of Fame. When I did the intro to this show, I stuffed it up. I called it the NBA Hall of Fame. I had to go redo that. Cause it's not the NBA Hall of Fame. It is the Basketball Hall of Fame. Of course, John is hosting Locked On Celtics, and you can check him out over there and host Locked On NBA one day a week as well. Thanks for coming on and chatting Basketball Hall of Fame with me.
My pleasure, man. Anytime.
Do you or someone you know suffer from excessive sweating? This is an embarrassing thing. Like, it's not something that you want to have to deal with out at work, at school, in a social setting, and you're just sweating right through your shirt. Well, Sweatblock is what you need. It's doctor created and doctor recommended, and it works for up to 7 days per use. Sweatblock also gives you the dry shirt guarantee. If Sweatblock doesn't keep you dry, you get your money back. You don't want to have to think, oh, what color shirt am I going to wear today in case, you know, I sweat too much and then there's a big stain and people can see exactly what's going on and see that problem. No one wants that. Before bed, get the Sweatblock wipes, wipe them under your arm, go to sleep, wake up the next morning, have a wash, head off to school, head off to work, head off to wherever you're going, and feel confident in the knowledge that Sweatblock has you covered. This product's been around for over 10 years and you've been able to get it at Amazon. You can get it at CVS, you can get it wherever. But if you get it at sweatblock.com, you can use our promo code and you can save 20%. So go to sweatblock.com and use that promo code 20% and get yourself some Sweatblock to eliminate that embarrassing problem of excessive sweating. Does this sound familiar? You've got one device that lets you catch the game live, another that lets you stream your favorite shows, you're watching your sports highlights on your phone, and you've got your neighbor's best friend's login for all the other good stuff. Well, I want to tell you about a simple way to get all that entertainment you love without the hassle, and a great way to finally get your TV together. It's called DirecTV Stream, and it brings your live TV and on-demand favorites together like never before, so you can watch your favorite sports, movies, and shows all in one place. That means no more juggling remotes, and no need to buy another device ever again. And the best part, there's no annual contract. So get rid of the clutter and the confusion and get your TV together with DirecTV Stream. You can learn more at DirecTV.com. That's DirecTV.com. Compatible device required and content varies by package. All right, so let's bring in the host of the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. Sean Coleman is here with me. Over the last few days, Sean, Marc Gasol is back as a member of the Memphis Grizzlies, of course. Well, he started out with the Lakers, but yeah, traded to the Grizzlies as part of the Pau Gasol deal, ended up in Toronto, won a championship back with the Lakers. And now, as his NBA career is 100% done, 99% over, I don't think he's coming back to the NBA at all. He was traded back to Memphis. So just what were the details of that deal, first of all?
Yeah, the details were, and first off, thanks for having me as always, Josh. Hope you're well. The details were that the Grizzlies traded their 2016 second-round pick, Wong Jeline, to the Los Angeles Lakers. Great value for Jeline, by the way. And getting Marc Gasol and the 2024 second-round pick back. And I think it's pretty cool that a player likely will start his career being traded to the same, you know, in the same way that he began his career. He started his career and ended his career the same way, being traded from the Lakers to the Grizzlies. This move was just simply for the Grizzlies to get an asset. It also was for them to have, you know, the symbolism of getting Marc Gasol. The likely outcome from this is that they will, you know, work out a buyout, waiving, releasing, whatever you want to call it, for Gasol to stay in Spain. There's been rumors he could join his brother on the Spanish, you know, to play in Spain somewhere. There is a second division team in Spain that Gasol, I believe, is part owner of. He may own outright, but he may play for them. But you're correct. His NBA career is likely over. And the significance of it is that he ends his career with the Grizzlies, could lead to maybe him being here for the retirement of Tony Allen and Zach Randolph's jerseys. But overall, this should open up some doors to make it easy for the Grizzlies to fully honor him, you know, and his legacy, obviously, with the Grizzlies.
Yeah, so I think that, as well as the COVID situation, that Gasol was very displeased with what happened with the Lakers last season with the Andre Drummond scenario and him being benched and DNP'd and then brought back in and then not sure of what his role was going to be. And he was done. He's like, I'm not dealing with this. You know, obviously, COVID and his family. There is a report that he is going to be signing with Girona over in Spain. I don't think that's been confirmed yet, but that looks like where he could be playing for this upcoming season. But this move helps the Lakers save some money getting out of his contract, but also there's a large portion of this, or nearly all of it, because, you know, I think that second round pick from the Lakers is probably going to be nothing in the end, Sean. It's sentimentality. It's the Grizzlies helping out the Lakers a little bit with money and, you know, getting that second round draft pick, but also just bringing Mark back onto the team as a feel-good sort of situation, and then that they work out what that buyout is and let him go back to Spain. In terms of Marc Gasol, now, we just had the Basketball Hall of Fame, and I spoke earlier with John Corrales about the Basketball Hall of Fame, and we made the point to say it's not the NBA Hall of Fame, it is the Basketball Hall of Fame. And I think Marc Gasol should be an absolute lock for that based on not only his NBA production, Defensive Player of the Year, of course, but his international value, what he's been able to do playing for Spain over the years as well. Do you think that people will probably debate that, Sean, but there really shouldn't be any debate about his, you know, Basketball Hall of Fame credentials?
There absolutely should not be. He was a significant, and I think the thing about it is this, is that if you look at it numbers wise, I can certainly understand where he may not have the quantity of numbers, the counting numbers, the peak that you may want. But you also have to look, I think, from it from a narrative perspective, and the NBA, I think, has a bit lower threshold than other Hall of Fames because narrative does make sense. You've got the international perspective. You've got the fact that he was arguably the most accomplished player in the peak of a specific franchise in the NBA with the Grizzlies. You know, he absolutely was a standout player in a small market like Memphis. And I think, Josh, also there's a narrative to be had. There is not a pair of brothers who are in the Basketball Hall of Fame due to their playing career. I think that the connection between Powell and Mark, the fact that they have been the backbone for the Grizzlies for nearly two decades, I think you add that to their international and NBA statistics, it's a great narrative to get both in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that's a good point as well. And again, he only started in the NBA at age 24, so he's, you know, a lot of international basketball playing in Spain before that, and then, of course, representing the Spanish national team. Now, we talk about, you know, being the best player on that peak Grizzlies team, you know, had a conference final appearance there. Of course, he won a title as a starter in Toronto as well. That was going to be my question. Who do you think was the best player on that Grizzlies team between Mike Conley and Marc Gasol? Because they are, you know, almost inextricably linked throughout that period. I tend to agree that it probably was Gasol, and I think you lean that way too.
Correct. In terms of the natural talents that have ever played for the Grizzlies, I will go as of right now. I think that Ja Morant may be the best natural talent that's ever played for the Grizzlies in time. But when you look at natural talent with career accomplishments, I think it goes Powell and Marc Gasol. Gasol just had a higher peak as a player. Obviously, three All-Star games, had the All-NBA appearance, Defensive Player of the Year, as you mentioned. You know, and he also, in what was a really cool moment for Memphis in the 2015 All-Star game, starting across from his brother, the only pair of brothers ever to start against each other in an All-Star game. So I give peak to Marc Gasol during that grit and grind era. And as of right now, until Ja Morant starts to get into his peak years, the Gasol brothers are the two best talents that have ever played for the Grizzlies.
Here's a question for you, Sean, without notice. What was Marc Gasol's highest ever points per game average? Roughly.
I want to say it was his 2016-2017 season.
Correct.
And it was 16 to 17 points per game, maybe a little higher. That 16-17 season, when David Fizdale opened up his offensive game, Josh, he made more threes. He made at least 100 threes, more threes in that season. I think 10 times more threes that season than he had made in his career previously. But that 16-17 season, 17 points a game.
It was the 16-17 season that was his best season. You're right, he went over 100 threes in that season for the first time, but he actually averaged 19.5 points. He's almost at 20 points per game that year. And I wouldn't have thought that. I wouldn't have thought he was ever a 20-point per game scorer. But there you go. He was able to do those things, like increasing that offensive output. He also that season averaged almost 5 assists per game. You know, really started to work in that be just that focal point of the offense, have the higher usage, be that more of a scorer, be a facilitator, as well as having the defensive accomplishments. And he did that at age 32, really got to his peak at that point. So quite a remarkable career when you think about it, just how good he was defensively. And then you're just adding bits and pieces to his game, like the passing and like the shooting, which developed 6, 7, 8, 9 years into his career, 10 plus, 11 plus years into his professional basketball life, just to develop those skills. Shows the way that he was able to work and sort of mold himself to the current NBA environment that he was in. So it is a little bit sad, I guess, the way that he has gone out, because I think he still had stuff to offer the NBA this season, Sean, but I do think that the situation with the Lakers did sour him last year, along with the COVID scenario, but I think he still could have been a useful player this season.
Absolutely, and that's another reason why you hit the nail on the head. That 2016-2017 season, the reason why it stands out so vividly in my mind is that's really when the Grizzlies started to focus on offense due to David Fizdale, and that was the other evolution of Marc Gasol's career. You go from the banger at the start of his career to a guy who could facilitate the offense in limited situations. He wasn't Arvydas Sabonis, wasn't Nikola Jokic, but he was a very good passing big during the early part of the 2010s decade, and then, of course, adding the three. So the ability for him to evolve his game as a big man, I also think gave him enough longevity to make the Hall of Fame a lock.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting to see if he gets in first ballot or not. He'll get there eventually, but it is a remarkable NBA career and an absolute Grizzlies legend. Marc Gasol is done in the NBA. People need to appreciate just how good he actually was, and I'm sure there will be no Memphis fans who undersells the production and the importance that he provided to that Memphis team. Sean, thank you for coming on discussing Marc Gasol and his legacy across the NBA and in the history of the Memphis Grizzlies for us here on Locked On NBA.
Always a pleasure, Josh. Have a great day, sir.
With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models of cars, it's now impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all of the parts that you need. Why would you endure often pointless and seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the person behind the counter orders the parts on their computer, choosing the only brand their warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. So save time and money when using rockauto.com. Why would you choose to spend 30, 50, even 100% more for the same parts from a chain store or car dealership? For example, a Honda Odyssey fuel pump is $353 from a chain store, but at Rock Auto, you can get it for $216. Rock Auto is a family business serving do-it-yourselfers for over 20 years, and the prices are always reliably low for every customer. Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck, and write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so that they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. And that'll do it for another episode of Locked On NBA. Don't forget to follow this podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and on the Odyssey app. We're also on YouTube, so go search Locked On NBA. You'll also find your favorite team show on all of those podcast apps and across YouTube as well, as we're rolling out all the shows over on YouTube. So check us out over there. Subscribe, give it a thumbs up, ring the notification bell so you never miss an episode. You can find my show, Locked On Fantasy Basketball, there as well. And find me on Twitter at redrock_bball. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.